You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. We're back from All-Star. Chicago is now in the rearview mirror, but a friend of the program is back to talk with us about the Heat, Dwayne Wade, and everything related to Miami nowadays. That's Rowan Adcarney of the crossover, SI.com. How are you doing, Rowan?
I'm great, David. How you been, man? You were on the ground in Chicago. How was it? Apparently, you love the cold like some kind of sociopath. You said you were okay with the sub-zero temperatures.
You know, it was a little bit of an adjustment, but I feel like as long as you have good gloves and a nice cap, you're okay. Like the body temperature wasn't a concern. It was the hands and the head, obviously. Like my ears were getting cold there. I went out for drinks on Thursday night and lost my cap that night on the walk back to the hotel. And then on Friday morning, I had to go back out and get a new cap. And luckily, there were no events taking place there, and I already had my credentials. So I was able to get something on the way to the media hotel where the shuttle was taking us to the Wintrust Center for media availability. But those 5 minutes during that walk were pretty painful, I'll be honest with you.
Just listen to all these hoops you had to jump through. I spent 4 winters in Chicago, and needless to say, I will not go back unless my life depends on it.
Wow, where haven't you lived? It seems like you've been all over the place. I mean, you're still relatively young. You've spent time in Florida, obviously California, New York, Chicago. I mean, come on, man. You're a global personality. I feel honored just to be talking to you.
You know, David, I just go where the checks are. That's it. That's really all it is. That's what my life philosophy is.
That's fair. But you know, as much as I'd love to talk, we could have our own travel-themed podcast here, although I think you'd be carrying it as you always do. But you're actually here for your incredible knowledge and expertise on all things Dwayne Wade and Miami Heat related. Obviously, this weekend is a big deal for Heat fans and for Dwayne Wade in particular, who was all over Chicago. Obviously, as a Chicago native during All-Star, he was honored frequently. He was at the Legends Brunch where he was honored with the Community Ambassador Award, but he was a frequent presence there. Not only that, but of course also some notoriety as a judge in the slam dunk contest. But with Dwayne Wade's jersey retirement, I thought it would be a good opportunity to get you on the show and kind of talk about your memories of Dwayne and everything else, because obviously you have a close connection with Dwayne. I believe he is your favorite player of all time. Is that fair?
He's up there. I mean, I don't want to disrespect Spo or Zoe or UD, but yes, Dwayne Wade is arguably my favorite basketball player of all time, for sure.
So what is your thought process? I mean, I know you're media now and somewhat removed from it, but when you see like the notification that came out a couple months ago, I want to say early January, saying that Dwayne's jersey was going to be retired, and it's this 3-day event where they're going to be showing a documentary he's put together and so many other events that are tied into not just the game that's taking place on Saturday versus the Cleveland Cavaliers, his former team, I might add. What is your feeling about that? Like, because I know on the outside, and it's so hard for Heat fans to kind of understand this, but you know, outside the bubble of Heat fandom, other fans or even media types of like other teams, you know, hear a 3-day ceremony being devoted to Dwayne, and the collective eye rolling almost breaks the internet. Like, what is your feeling of that? Is it excessive? Is it just right on par? Is it well deserved, etc.?
I mean, I guess the only way it would be excessive is if people weren't receptive to it, right? And I think his fans are receptive to it, and that's really what it comes down to for me. I understand the eye rolling. I get all of that stuff. I understand why on the outside it would seem so ridiculous. And is it a little over the top? Sure, but I think you're talking about the greatest athlete South Florida had for an entire generation. I think probably an even greater legacy than Dan Marino, frankly. I mean, he is the athlete in South Florida, and what it comes down to is there's an appetite from his fans for all of these things. He doesn't live in Miami anymore. He lives in Los Angeles. It's not like he's a regular at Heat games, a regular in Miami. I think the fans are clamoring for this, and to me, that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. There's an appetite for it in Miami. The fans there are nowhere near close to being tired of him. They welcome this celebration, and I think it's a moment for, you know, Dwayne to share it with his loved ones and for the fans to share it with him. And as long as those two parties are happy and everyone's excited, then, you know, I just don't understand why anyone would roll their eyes at it. You know, what's the point? What do you have to gain? If you're not interested in it, no one's going to force you to be interested in it. But I think the fans of Dwayne Wade, the Miami Heat fans, are going to be so thoroughly excited about, you know, all 3 days that if they're happy, then who are we to take away from their joy?
Yeah, I think that's fair. But I also, it kind of feels a little bit like the Michael Jordan jersey retirement, you know, that the number 23 would never be worn. Like, it feels like it's a more PR-related move than anything else. And maybe I'm just jaded, but some of this also feels like it's pushing the boundaries as to what retirement ceremonies are. No longer will one day be enough. No longer will the jersey hanging from the rafters be enough. It's about having a week-long event, you know, or something like that. Like, who's the next? Is it Mark Cuban? Is it Steve Ballmer? Who's the next owner or team president to kind of go over the top and say, you know what, we have to devote more time because they've set the bar so high in Miami? Am I coming across too jaded, perhaps?
It seems a little cynical. I mean, I think it's a sliding scale. I think that Dwayne Wade is the most, it's him or Pat Riley, and I would argue it's more so Dwayne Wade, the most important figure in that franchise's history.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I mean, Riley set a template, but without Dwayne, it doesn't exist, you know? It doesn't carry through. It doesn't continue past Alonzo Mourning.
And so how do you properly honor somebody who is that important to your franchise, that important to your city? You know, if the Heat do go ahead and retire LeBron James's number one day, which I expect them to do, would it be a three-day thing? Probably not. But, no. You know, he's not as important to the franchise as Dwayne Wade was. So I think that it's a sliding scale, and I'm not worried about it becoming the new norm or anything like that. I think every franchise is entitled to do what feels right for their own star, and as long as that team's fans are happy, then yeah, man, let everyone cook. That's how I feel.
Yeah, you're so level-headed. I appreciate it, but you know, what do you get fired up about, man? Because I mean, I know Dion is certainly up there, but anything else that you kind of get worked up over? Because it's like you have such an even-keel perspective. I'm definitely jealous.
You know what I got worked up was when Nick Nurse's end of game All-Star lineups. I don't know what the hell he was thinking with that. Why was Kemba Walker on the floor for a defensive possession at the end of the All-Star game? I do get worked up, trust me. And if anything, it's even about more rational things than most people. But, yeah, I get worked up, David. Don't worry. We'll find it. We'll find those things, and when we do, it'll be great. But I'm not going to force it. But, yes, the Nick Nurse's All-Star Game lineups definitely had me screaming at my TV a little bit.
All right, so we don't want to press you too much, and we certainly don't want to piss you off on a podcast because, obviously, you're a long-term guest and friend, and so we don't want to set you off that. And the next segment, we'll continue to talk a little bit about Dwayne, his legacy, and of course the All-Star break and everything related to the Heat. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Whether you're an elite athlete or just a regular person trying to get through the day, the stress of daily life weighs on all of us, and muscle pain and muscle tension is a real thing. And that's why I use Theragun, the handheld percussive therapy device that releases your deepest muscle tension using a scientifically calibrated combination of depth, speed, and power. If you want to feel better naturally, treat your pain, and get back to your life, try Theragun risk-free for 30 days or your money back by going to theragun.com/lockedon. For a limited time, my listeners to this podcast get a free charging stand with purchase, a $79 value. That's theragun.com/lockedon. theragun.com/lockedon. Back with Rowan DeCarney of SI.com, talking about Dwayne Wade. And you were saying before the break that you were a little upset about Nick Nurse and his coaching strategy at the All-Star break. Was it disappointing that Bam wasn't in the closing moments of what was a tightly contested game? Is that what the issue was?
Listen, I don't care who it was. It did not make sense to me that for a key defensive possession, Kemba Walker was on the floor when Team LeBron was targeting him time and time again in switches.
Right.
Listen, was I really mad about it? No. Was I a little surprised? Yes. I just finally the game gets serious. Both teams seem to be, you know, making a lot of adjustments based on what's actually happening on the floor. And I just was shocked that Nick Nurse, I mean, Jimmy Butler's on the bench, whether it's Bam. I don't even remember who else was on the team at this point, which shows you how much I actually care about this. But certainly there could have been one more wing player he could have thrown on the floor. As opposed to, you know, Kyle Lowry at least ended up making a couple plays, but him and Kemba just looked lost offensively. I didn't get it. I didn't get it, David, and I was a little upset.
What was your overall feelings on Miami's All-Star Weekend? Because being there, and I talked to a couple of Heat guys, and the word that they used, and something I kind of hinted at as well, was that it was a very successful one for Miami. Because I feel like this season has been, if not necessarily a fluke, certainly something unexpected from a lot of people, especially on the outside. And I'll be honest, even on the inside, like I don't think anybody expected this team to be this good this quickly. And so to achieve the kind of success they've had and then to be recognized by having a participant in every event in All-Star Weekend, I think that says a lot about the quality of the personnel on this team and the fact that there is some recognition, at least from media members and the people who make these kinds of decisions. But I feel like the success from this weekend is based on people around the country kind of recognizing, hey, this Heat team is pretty good because you've got, you know, Kendrick Nunn and you should have had Tyler Hero in the Rising Stars game. You've got Duncan in the three-point shootout. Bam, I think, opening a lot of eyes by being the winner of the skills competition. And then both he and Jimmy on the All-Star break. What were your overall feelings on Miami's level of participation in Chicago?
I mean, it's definitely great to see guys participating every single night. I think that says a lot about the health of the franchise. I do think Bam winning the skills competition was a great way for him to kind of familiarize himself with people who maybe don't watch the Heat a lot. I'd have to say, though, what is with Jimmy Butler in All-Star games, man? A couple years ago, he didn't even play. Then this year, just not his best performance. Does he hate them? What's going on? Is he just partying too much? I honestly have no idea. I thought this year maybe he would take it all a little bit more seriously. I'm not saying he didn't.
I don't think he does. I honestly don't think he does. Like, I feel like there's no benefit and consequence from either winning or losing this game, and so he does not take it seriously. It's, not, it's part of the rich dichotomy of who Jimmy Butler is that he'll compete like crazy when it actually means something, but if it doesn't mean anything, then what's the point? And so he kind of just takes it a little bit. I don't think there's a lazy part of him anywhere, and so he just doesn't take it as seriously. It's all about just kind of living in the moment, experiencing it, especially going alongside Bam and his first experience at this event. So I just don't think he takes the game all that seriously. I mean, to a point, he was almost like trying too hard in some other ways. Like he's actually playing defense. He was trying to break up passes and do the making the right play by curling around the baseline and trying to find an open 3-point shooter. It's like, come on, man, this is the All-Star break. This isn't, you know, going up against Toronto in mid-February. You know, this is something different. So I think he's just a little different. That's all. And even after the game itself, he said, you know, he was just looking forward to a break and kind of just getting away from everything for a little while. He wasn't too concerned about Chicago or All-Star game or anything like that. He just wanted to enjoy time with family. So this is covering him this year has kind of just opened my eyes about the kind of person he is. Like you get glimpses here and there, and there's enough great writing about Jimmy and his personality. And even prior to the start of the season, Wes and I had a week where we talked to reporters who had covered him up close in Minnesota, Philadelphia, and Chicago. And you kind of start to see pieces of the puzzle, and even, you know, covering him for 3 months in Miami, I don't think we'll ever see the full scope of who Jimmy Butler is, but it's just interesting to see how he's well-liked and appreciated in that locker room. And I think that all the talk about him being a cancer and all that has been so wildly overstated. And he's a very interesting person to cover on a full-time basis, I'll be honest with you.
So I'm not doubting any of the things you just said, David. All I'm going to say is this. Personally, that's the kind of game where I'd want to be one of the last 10 guys on the court. Maybe Jimmy Butler really doesn't care. I'm just surprised that in such a competitive environment as it became in the fourth quarter, that maybe that didn't even make him take it more seriously. But maybe he wasn't expecting it to get as competitive as it did. It just would have been nice to see him on the court with all those other great players when it really came down to it at the end. And I think it was a shame for Heat fans, at least, not to be able to see him in that environment with all those other guys on the floor.
Yeah, that makes sense. I kind of want to talk about Derrick Jones Jr. in the slam dunk contest, because What is your feeling on this? Because, I mean, obviously you have some connection to Miami and Heat fandom. But I was sitting next to a former coworker of yours, Ben Golliver, in the post slam dunk contest media availability, and his words were outraged. Like, he was outraged at the scoring, and a genuine feeling that what's his name from Orlando, Aaron Gordon, had been robbed of a championship there. And I'm curious as to what your feelings were, because I've already made mine pretty clear on this podcast. But what was your take on all of it?
I mean, to be completely honest, dude, I really care about who won at the end of the day. Not really. I just wanted to see some cool slam dunks. That's my position on the dunk contest. I just want to see some cool slam dunks, and we got those. All that matters is that it's a memorable night. Do I have sympathy for Aaron Gordon? Absolutely. He's had two amazing performances in the dunk contest and no trophies to show for it. That, I think, has to be genuinely upsetting for him. Do I think he got robbed in some kind of travesty? Not really. Part of the issue with the dunk contest is early in the night, you know, I think the judges are more amenable to handing out 50s because everyone's getting swept up in the excitement. But then later in the night, you know, you might see a better dunk, so that has to be a 50. And then the scoring is just, it's such an inexact science. I do think there were a couple of Aaron Gordon's dunks that got 50s that maybe didn't deserve it. I think Derrick Jones Jr.'s last dunk, the one step inside the free throw line, was maybe a touch underrated. So do I think it was a travesty? Was I outraged? Did anyone get robbed? No. Do I think Aaron Gordon has a right to be upset? Yes, absolutely. He's had two incredible dunk contest performances, like I said, with nothing to show for it. And that has to be incredibly, incredibly frustrating. So I wasn't upset that Derrick Jones Jr. won. Do I think, but like I said, I just think Aaron Gordon is in the position to feel the way he does is completely justified, but I don't think it was some great travesty. We don't need a congressional inquiry or anything like that.
Is that the next step? Is that trying to find out? Is the whole system going to be ratified now because of Aaron Gordon being slighted for a second time? I mean, I don't know. Like, having covered Aaron in Orlando, I know he takes this seriously, and I mean, I did feel for him at the same time. I also thought Derek's dunks were better overall. Like, I think they were pretty good, and I mean, maybe I don't feel like I'm biased. Maybe I wouldn't recognize it if I was, but at the same time, I feel like Derek's dunks were just overall better, and I hope they don't tweak it. I don't hope they don't make changes, because I kind of feel like that was, if nothing else, that was part of the interesting thing about the whole slam dunk contest, is not only were the dunks great, but then the fact that everybody was still talking about this the next day, that there was this kind of robbery and everything. Yeah, exactly. It catapults a level of interest. And I think for an event that had been kind of declining and suffocating over the last few years, it's good to see everybody's interest being at an all-time high.
I could not agree more, David. You hit the nail on the head. All that matters is that people are talking about this event, that there's interest in this event. And any quote-unquote controversy, I think, ultimately is good for the NBA. And it's good for the dunk contest.
Yeah. Well, what's good for this show is continuing to talk to Rodner Carney, which we'll do in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. So I did want to touch on something that, spectacular work that you did recently, which was a piece on Duncan Robinson, where you kind of did a little journalism, as you put in one of your tweets. You went digging deep on Duncan's background and the kind of player he is, and it was a really, really good piece. I tweeted it out from the account, but if any of my listeners have not heard it, or read it rather, go and do yourself a favor, because it was kind of coming off the heels of Zach Lowe's fantastic piece on Bam, but it was just as good, I think, and certainly worthy of attention there. What was the impetus for wanting to do a story on Duncan Robinson?
Just watching him play, you realize how important he is to the Heat offense. Yes. More so, maybe even not watching him play, but watching the team try to play without him. Mm. There are just certain games where you're watching, you're wondering, when is Duncan going to get back on the court, because they're struggling right now? And that's just such a fascinating dynamic to me. And as that was happening, it just kind of hit me that, is he the third most important player on the team right after Bam and Jimmy? I mean, could you make that argument? I don't think it's ridiculous for sure. So
no, I've made it. And actually, it is a point of concern for me is that he is such a focal point on this offense, such a release valve, because you know you're creating all these off ball actions for him so that he can get some space, and then he's shooting at such a high level. But what happens if that shooting is not there in the playoffs? And there's no reason to expect that he will be able to shoot this well. He's never tasted playoff action before, so that's a concern of mine for sure.
And what happens when in the playoffs come around and he's getting targeted
right
over and over on the defensive end? And we're seeing it a little bit, you know, right now during the regular season, and it's a problem for the Heat at the end of games. You know, Spo has maybe complained about the amount of fouls he gets called for and those kinds of things, which I don't even blame Spo about. I do think Duncan maybe picks up some extra ticky-tack ones. But
for sure,
that really is, to me, the fascinating part about him, because he's become so important to the team. It's not as simple as them, taking him off the court and putting on someone like Jay Crowder. They just would not have the same level of gravity as Duncan. But how are they going to manage that come playoff time? Because every team is going to target him over and over again.
Yeah, and especially in a playoff series where you're going to see that same kind of action over and over, I wonder whether or not he's going to be limited. And then if you're going at him defensively, like, what kind of adjustments, if any, can he make? I mean, it's a concern. And you always expect Eric Spoelstra to have some kind of wrinkle that he can incorporate, but I'm not sure if the team is capable of. I mean, you're relying so heavily. This has always been something I've brought up a number of times, so I apologize to my listeners, but you're getting as much as you can out of Kendrick Nunn. You're relying on Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, this really youthful core, and you have no idea how they're going to be able to play up to this level in the playoffs, and I think that's a problem. You touched on Jay Crowder, and what did you think that Miami were going to be buyers at the trade deadline? Because I don't know that was the case. I thought they would look into, you know, maybe trying to move Deion's contract just because he had fallen out of favor with the team. But I didn't see them making the move that they did. I certainly didn't think Justice was going to be traded, even though now we're kind of seeing that maybe they were frustrated with his response to the injury and things of this sort. But did you think that Miami were going to be buyers? And that what do you think on the move to acquire Andre Iguodala and Jay Crowder?
I mean, I definitely would not say I was surprised that they were looking to upgrade, only because of, like you said, the surprise success of the season. Mm-hmm. I could see why they would feel like, you know, this is a chance to maybe, you know, see what they can do in the Eastern Conference, which obviously has a juggernaut in Milwaukee, but we saw them be a juggernaut last year and not make the finals. So I guess it wasn't shocking to me that they were buyers. I was very surprised when Justice Winslow got moved. That's one that's still going to bother me for a while. I feel like I'll always believe in his talent and what he could have done for this team. I'm still a little bit reserved on the trade. I mean, Jay Crowder's shot the heck out of the ball so far. If he keeps it up even somewhat the way he's been shooting so far, I mean, it's a great trade for them. I do need to see a little bit more of what, you know, Andre Iguodala can do before I'm ready to say it was a home run trade for him. Obviously, he's has a great history in this league, a great legacy in this league, is an outstanding player when healthy. And it's not even that I think he's unhealthy. It's just we haven't seen him play basketball in a long time. And while he was obviously a useful player in the playoffs with Warriors, I think it's also fair that maybe he was a step slower than what he's been in his heyday. So I just need to see a little bit more from him before I'm willing to say it was a slam dunk home run trade for the Heat. I do think ultimately, in some ways, it's an upgrade just by getting rotation players. I mean, this is a team that was getting very little from Deion. We'd seen a little bit of a resurgence from James Johnson. They weren't getting anything from Justice while he was hurting. So just having at least two more guys that can actually be in the rotation night to night will help them a lot. But to me, it wasn't a clear cut slam dunk trade, if only because I think we need to see a little bit more from Iguodala before we can say that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because it seemed like he was starting to get his legs out from under him a little bit as the All-Star break was approaching, and then you have this long break in between, and I wonder how is he going to be responding to that? Is he going to regress a little bit? Is he going to be able to take that time to continue to develop somewhat? It's going to be interesting for sure. Do you think it raises the ceiling of this team, and what do you think is the ultimate level for this team this year?
That's a great question. I do think it raises the ceiling of this team a little bit. I think that the Heat realistically were lagging a little bit behind Toronto and Boston. I mean, we're seeing it in the standings right now, but I do think the Heat, even when the record was at its best, wasn't necessarily always as good as those two teams. So I think this definitely brings the Heat closer to Boston and Toronto. Their ceiling, I still think, is Eastern Conference Finals. I don't see them making the finals as presently constructed. And that Eastern Conference Finals berth could very well depend on matchups and seedings. It won't be as simple as just the Heat beating whoever's in their path. So that's the way I see it right now. And that's, frankly, it would be very successful for this team that I don't think had that level of expectation coming into this season.
Which team do you see as the most difficult matchup in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, assuming that they'll – I mean, I can't see that they'll get out of the Eastern Conference, so I'm not even worried about the Western and any finals matchup. But which team? Is it Toronto, Boston, Milwaukee? Which team do you think is most dangerous as far as Miami and matching up against them is concerned?
I mean, I don't even count Milwaukee because I think Milwaukee is by far, you know, the class of the conference. I think of the other teams you mentioned, I think Boston's really good. We've seen them handle Miami twice with ease so far. I mean, Miami was a back-to-back that first game, some injuries the second one. So, I mean, you can make the excuses if you want, but I think Boston is a really, really tough matchup for the Heat.
Both matchups were actually on back-to-backs. It's the second night of back-to-backs, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I think the second time they played Boston was actually here at home after the Orlando Magic game that took place on Monday. That was the day after the death of Kobe Bryant. And so that there was this lingering kind of shadow over everything. They faced Orlando on Monday, and then they hosted Boston on Tuesday. So it was a rare home back-to-back, which actually they have another one later this month as well, but that's an interesting thing there. And yeah, I don't know if we've ever seen the full version of Miami going up against Boston, but yeah, I agree that they are a dangerous matchup there. You know, before I let you go, because I know that you're pressed for time, we never really talked about your feelings on Deion Waiters' exile from Miami, and I guess more importantly, if you think that there's a place for him in the NBA still to this, you know, for a contending team or to join any team whatsoever, because we have not heard anything other than the Lakers might be somewhat interested in bringing him aboard this season for a title run. Where do you see is the next step for Deion, and what do you think about his whole exile from Miami?
I mean, it was obviously tough the way his Heat tenure ended. I certainly was hoping that he would find a way back into the rotation. I mean, he had some positive minutes, some good minutes for the team when he was finally able to get back onto the court. I obviously very, very much hope he finds his way back into the league, not only because I firmly believe he's an entertaining player. He's someone who is fun to watch when he has it going. But just for his own sake, I mean, I know that not everyone, I don't expect everyone to have had this opportunity, but after spending time with him in Philadelphia, you know, meeting him, meeting his family, seeing the people around him, I just think I have a different understanding of him than most people. I don't think Deion Waiters is a bad teammate. I don't think he's a bad guy. I don't think he's selfish. He just really, really needs basketball. He really, really wants to play basketball. So I hope he continues to get that opportunity. And I think he could absolutely contribute on a team, even like the Lakers, wherever he does end up. I think he still has a lot to offer this game, and I hope he gets that chance.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up, because I feel like I've been fighting this uphill battle all season long, and I've gotten a lot of crap for it. Even from people who are longtime listeners of the show, they think I'm a Deion apologist. I believe that was a terminology that used most frequently, and especially when he had incident after incident, and what we heard, at least from the team's perspective. And I don't think I was defending him in a biased way, just merely presenting a lot of what you just said was that basketball is so important to him. It's what drives him so completely. And to have that aspect of his life removed from him, not just because of injury for 2 years, but working his way into such a great shape and then not getting the opportunity to play regularly, it really took a lot out of him. And I think he did some things that he regrets 100%, but at the same time, I think you're right that there is a place for him still in this league, and I hope he finds it soon. But that's it for today. Do you have any other parting thoughts you want to share about Miami? We didn't get into Rose recipes, unfortunately, but if you've got a minute or two and you want to share a recent culinary experience, I'd love to hear it.
I was just thinking the same thing. I was like, I'm really mad at myself because I did not come prepared with the recipe today. That's on me. Like, I owe the listeners more than that. Like, put me down for two recipes next time. But I honestly just truly don't have anything exciting today, which is a bummer. I don't know how that happened. You know,
do you have a favorite meal in Chicago that we could all tie together to Dwayne, the All-Star, etc.?
You know, I got to say, if any of you listeners ever find yourself in Chicago, make your way over to Evanston. That's where I went to college at Northwestern.
Okay.
And go to Edzo's and get yourself a burger and garlic fries. And I promise you, you will not regret it, especially those garlic fries. I have had dreams about them over the last few years. So how about that for the Culinary Corner today? If you ever find yourself in Evanston, please do yourself a favor. Go to Edzo's, get a burger, get the garlic butter fries, and you will thank me. I know that you will. I know that you won't, David, because you don't eat meat, but for all your meat-eating listeners out there, please trust me on this one.
How far is Evanston from Chicago? Because I was thinking of heading over there to the Northwestern campus for something, but it's a little far out, like half an hour or so, or maybe more?
Yeah, I mean, it depends where in Chicago you are. You know, if you're in Edgewater, something like that, it's not too far away. If you're downtown, I think it's something like 12 miles, but, you know, it just depends on the route you end up taking.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I should have gone over there, but I didn't. It's okay. No time for regrets, and no time to you know, worry about that right now, because you're a busy man. And as always, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. We always appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, David. Thank you for having me, man.
You got it. So that's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. The Heat are off until Thursday night when they take on the Atlanta Hawks in Atlanta. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support. Yeah! Wrap it up, man.